Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love.
And this is Dr. Lana Love.
Welcome to the show.
So today we have a very special guest, Matthew Hart, who is a former, or is a line producer, a film producer, and a Hollywood producer, in his background, and a blogger for thelifeintended.com. And is a channeler for the Guardian Alliance, or also called the Guardians.
In Matthew's blog called The Life Intended, he talks about his experiences, his channeled messages, and his experiences in all things spirit and healing.
Yep, he's very, very knowledgeable in spirit communication and mediumship and higher powers, and has vast experiences with both what we tend to think of as dark forces and angelic beings. And I've had a previous conversation with Matthew, and very interesting. We've got a lot to talk about. Very excited. Welcome to the show, Matthew.
Thank you so much to both of you. Real pleasure to be on the line with you.
Matthew, I was really surprised that you were in Hollywood, and I guess one of the questions that I have is, how do you balance the two? Because they're very different worlds, being a Hollywood producer and
they
being
are.
A spiritual person in contact with other powers.
I know. Well, it's been an ongoing exercise in figuring that out, but it's gotten easier over time. For the longest time, I kept the two distinct and separated. I had my film career, and I had my inner life, and never the twain should meet. just because back when I started in the movie industry, back in the 70s, but when I became a more prominent figure, when I started to produce, which is, I can't remember, but maybe the late 80s or early 90s when I started to, no, wait a second, later than that. It was like around 2003 when I started to line produce. And at that point in time, I started to feel a real disconnect that was hard to live with, because the two paths were diverging so greatly that it caused a lot of internal conflict. And from that point forward in my life, I've been working to kind of integrate the two lives and basically have no, give up any fear that I had of repercussions from the film side, from the production side, where people might get wind of what I was going through and think I was too weird to be to be hired. And yeah, to the point now where I'm completely transparent, and I'll talk about my spiritual life with my coworkers if they're interested, but only if they bring up the subject, only if perhaps they've seen something online and are curious. But otherwise, I don't speak about it. I just act in a kind manner, which is a little unusual in the film business.
Because they're quite cutthroat industry, isn't it? Can I, just looking through your biography, it looks like you've actually been associated with some pretty big names. Very exciting, actually. Can we names drop a bit? And what sort of,
if you like, sure, absolutely. I mean,
you've been in contact.
Pardon me?
What big names have you worked with?
Well, I've been in the movie industry a long time, so some of the films that I'm more proud of than others would be films with Denzel Washington. I did the movie called The Hurricane. I did, what else did I do with him? I did a movie called John Q, also with Denzel. I think those two movies really had a powerful message. So unlike the usual Hollywood entertainment, these ones had a little more substance to them. So I'm proud of them. Another film I worked on was called Frequency, which had a nice message to it too, with Dennis Quaid and Jim Caviezel. But over the years, I mean, I've worked with so many. I think there's very few Hollywood actors that I haven't worked with by this point in time. and I'm not really a big name dropper, but anybody could look me up on imdb.com, and that's the Internet Movie Database, and they could see the long list of credits of films and the positions that I've worked in.
But you know what's interesting, Matthew, is you're talking about Denzel Washington and well-known actors and actresses, and yet you're also channeling higher beings like Archangel Michael. So I wonder, in terms of status or credibility, it's kind of interesting when you sort of reflect on this too. Archangel Michael's a pretty big name as well. A lot of people channel him as well these days, time to time.
True.
But, you know,
I had no religious training, and so when Archangel Michael came through the first time, I might have heard of him, but I wasn't looking, you know what I mean? Anything that has happened to me in my life has really been, I don't want to say accidental, but because I don't believe in an accident, but it's nothing that I've initiated on my own, of my own volition. Everything has happened organically, and I've had to learn to allow and let it flow, or let God, as you say, to get out of the way and let these things happen and trust. That's been, you know, a big part of my journey. And
I just want to say, I think that's how you and I sort of ran into each other in a way. I don't think it's accidental at all, because I have a strong interest in the Guardians and the Guardian Alliance. Even the term Guardian is very familiar to me and very important to me. And I think I found you on Alexander Meter's website, Galactic Connection, and she's a good friend of ours. So it's all very synchronistic, the types of meetings that we have, especially you and I are both working with higher powers. So I can relate to a lot of your experiences and your biography on them, the life intended, and what we like to think of as, or what we call, negative beings and more angelic beings. We've had experiences with both, and unfortunately, the show is very short, and we don't have. It's very difficult to get into detail and all these things. But I do also understand your experiences within your sort of reluctance to want to come forward and talk about these things, because I was in a Rosicrucian order for many years, where we had professionals, doctors, lawyers, police officers, diplomats, scientists, who didn't want to come forward because they didn't want to be attacked on their credibility. Mm-hmm. And of course, Lana and I are, you know, Lana's a doctor and I'm an investigator. So we have, you know, we understand you.
So I have the same difficulty because I work in the area of mental health. And so you can see why I'm interested in spirituality and consciousness, because I work with the mind. However, once again, there are things that I am interested in that most other doctors in my field would not think it kosher to really, you know, go into or really take seriously. Although I think more and more people are beginning to open up, but I do have the same, I guess, pattern where I try to keep the two possibly a little bit more distinct, unless I have patients that are very open to that, which has occurred, in which case it flows quite seamlessly. Yeah. Matthew, I'm just wondering if you could tell us, it must have been amazing for you to have these experiences. Were you spiritual before, or did it just come out of the blue for you?
No, I wasn't at all. I was actually the opposite, really. I mean, I think I was open-minded. I would call myself, growing up, agnostic-minded. I don't know if I'm even using that term correctly, but to me it means I had a willingness to believe, but I couldn't believe without proof. So I definitely much more scientific-minded and left-brained growing up. And I had a family that was spiritual on my mother's side. She was very spiritual, and I had two older sisters that followed in my mother's footsteps. But I kind of looked upon them with a little bit of disdain. I didn't understand anything about their spirituality, and I thought it was strange. And so that pretty much defined me in my early years, until I had the first of three spiritual crises that happened in my early 20s. And those three crises opened the door to spirituality, because by the time the third crisis happened, I felt out of control. I felt like there was something happening to me, because these three experiences, which I talk about in my profile, but they all happened within a two-year period. Every March for 3 years, one of these three experiences happened, and the first being a very real and somewhat frightening experience with a ghost, and I had, or a poltergeist, you might say.
Can you tell us
a little
about that?
Yeah, as you know, I didn't believe in anything spiritual, including ghosts. I thought they were all just stories. And I had a brother-in-law at the time who told me, who was the son of a United Church minister, and very credible and very believable, and he wasn't a prankster. And he told me this story about his sister, his younger sister, who used to keep a dream journal beside her bed when she was 16 years old. And one day, she woke up to find an entry in her dream journal that was written in a handwriting that wasn't familiar to her. It wasn't hers. She had no memory of waking up in the night and writing a dream down. And the dream described a situation that was going on in her household where her elder sister was apparently having an affair in the small town that they lived in with a married man. And it was a surprise to Carolyn, who found this information in her journal. And she took it to her sister and said, is this true? And her sister flew off the handle and accused her of finding her diary and reading it, because her elder sister was having an affair with a married man in town and had written about it in her journal. And one particular passage in this dream journal entry was word for word caught right out of the older sister's diary. And so clearly, to the older sister, the younger sister had found her diary, read it, and wrote about it in her own dream journal. And that's not what happened at all. The younger sister had no idea how it showed up there. And anyway, to cut that story short, eventually more entries turned up over the succession of several nights, and eventually a being introduced herself as this younger sister's spirit guide, and claimed that she had last lived in the world in the 1800s in England, and that she was particularly interested in the younger sister of my brother-in-law, and was showing up at this time as her guide to give her life guidance. So I heard this story, and I thought, that can't be. I thought, come on, this is just too fantastic. But if it is true, I thought, then I should be able to conduct an experiment. I should be able to bring about automatic writing myself. And so, being 21 years old and a little bit foolish, I found myself alone in my apartment one day, and I put a pen in my hand, and I said this little, I guess you would call it a prayer, although I didn't believe in God. I said, if ghosts are really real, then I'm going to invite one right here and now to write something through my hand with the pen in my hand, and prove to me one way or the other whether ghosts are real or not. And that's the setup to what became a very interesting experience. I wasn't afraid, but I did have a spirit enter me, and it did a fair bit of drawing. It eventually drew a very huge picture that I had no idea what it was drawing, but it would draw a line through a piece of paper, and I would stop it when my pen went off onto the table, and I would put another piece of paper down and tape it to the first, and off the pen would go again across the page, and eventually it ended up drawing this what looked like a portrait. Perhaps it was a self-portrait of a spirit being. It took about 60 pieces of paper all taped together to create it, and once I had that drawing, I was so kind of astounded by it, I wanted to show my mother, who was the spiritual one in the family, and I thought she would find it fascinating and interesting. And I took it to her house, and although she wasn't there at the time, my sister was, and she was less than interested in, she was kind of strangely detached from what I went through. And to cut to the end of the story, I left there kind of feeling, I left my parents' place feeling a little down, because my sister didn't find it all that interesting, and I had found the whole process fascinating. And later that night, I think I was already in bed when the phone rang at my apartment, and my mother was on the end of the line, and she sounded distressed, and she said, have you been to my house? Were you at my house today? And I said, yes, why? And she said, were you in my bedroom showing Anne something? I went, yeah, why? And she said, well, there's something in my room, and I can't get it out, and it stinks, like it stinks something fiercely horrible.
My goodness.
So this ended up being a very foul poltergeist that somehow decided to dislodge itself in my mother's bedroom once I brought it there. And that was pretty much my initiation into the world of spirit.
Was there a connection between the drawings that we'd done and the entity in your mother's bedroom?
I think I don't think so. Well, I think the connection was that I went over there, and for whatever reason, this spirit being that I brought with me, because it had never vacated me. When I finished the drawings, it was still within me. I felt it enter me through the crown of my head when I first sat down to you know, find out if ghosts were real. I felt this tingling, very pronounced tingling at the crown of my head, that suddenly flowed down into my, that immediately entered and flowed down into my body, like I describe it, I think, as a waterfall of chills. But it was unlike any kind of chills I'd ever felt before. It definitely felt like something was entering me. And I felt my posture suddenly change as I was sitting in the chair at my table at that time. I felt suddenly very erect, like my back suddenly straightened, and I felt taller than I am. I'm not a very tall man. I'm 5'6" tall, but I suddenly felt very tall. And as I drove to my mother's, I felt this being within me, even though I didn't recall the sensation till after all the events unfolded at my mother's with the ghost, you know, dispersing into her home. I felt this weird sensation that afterwards I felt guilty about. I felt this feeling like I was invincible as I sat at a traffic light and watched the people crossing in front of my car. I felt this, it's the only way I can describe it, is a strange kind of sensation or thought that I was invincible. And it wasn't a good feeling of invincibility. It was kind of sick. It was like a very dark feeling. And so I feel like I brought it.
Fascinating.
Yeah, Ron and I have had a lot of conversations around this, and you and I talked about, I've had many experiences with, I guess you could call them dark spirits. I've had run-ins with astral wildlife and negative astral parasites and some higher intelligent beings that might be considered extra-dimensional aliens or demons. I don't know. And I've had, you and I talked about you had an experience with something that looked like the Grim Reaper, which I've had those experiences as well. Wraiths, or these hooded dark figures that are seem to be very common in this world, in this reality, or whatever. So I don't know what to make of that. But I understand the feeling that you said that with dark powers, there tends to be a very overwhelming feeling of, like, almost like Darth Vader in Empire Strikes Back, when he says to Luke, "You don't know the power of the dark side of the Force," and he's almost overwhelmed with this euphoric sense of power. The
power.
Power.
Yes.
It's very effective, and it's very overwhelming. I remember it more than 10 or 15 years ago having that feeling. So it's uncommon. It's actually very common in this world for human beings, but it's actually very uncommon to actually be aware of the source of it and everything. But
I'm sitting here actually feeling somewhat jealous because I haven't had anything like this. The closest I have is feeling a room go cold. Well, I specifically went with a friend of mine who's a Ghostbuster to decide for myself whether ghosts were real or not, but that's the only sensation I got. But being in the field of mental health, obviously the thing that really, really interests me is how much of mental illness may be caused by spirits, and are we, as you know, in the medical field, in the psychology field, are we sometimes barking up the wrong tree with helping individuals? Because it does sound, the more and more I get into this, and also among my own patients, there are definitely sometimes when there appear to be external sources that are driving the mental illness.
Yes, and that given the history of the experiences that I've had, that thought has definitely crossed. Not just crossed my mind. It feels like very true, and it's a whole other conversation that we could talk about for hours. And I would love to maybe correspond with you, Lana, a little bit on this.
I think an awakening. When I describe my awakening, it's almost, when people describe awakenings, it's often a disassociated feeling, and there's visual disturbances, auditory. Things that look auditory hallucinations, and it looks like a psychotic break. And even people with schizophrenia, and I've worked in mental health as a case manager in various roles, and the things that they describe, they may not be just hallucinations. And even though they're disturbing, there may very well be some kind of reality to these visual illusions and things that people are describing. And we just don't actually, although we have medical terms and medical science to explain these phenomenons and these illnesses. We don't actually know what the reality is, the underlying truth of it all. It's very difficult to determine, I think. Is that how you look
that's
at it?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. It's sort of mainstream medicine, psychology, the view that it's, you know, anything like this is because things break down inside the brain.
Right.
We do not know the nature of reality. And I remember a wonderful quote that a friend of mine used to talk about. This is the same Ghostbuster friend who's actually a very practical, pragmatic man, but he sees ghosts all the time. It's just, you know, he sends them to the light when they become difficult. But he used to say that the same... The sea in which the psychotic is drowning in is the same sea that the guru, the ascended master, happily swims in. In other words, it's the same thing, but with psychosis, the person cannot cope with the overwhelming stimuli of awakening and of all the other stimuli that suddenly go into their brain and really would send them literally mad.
That's right.
But if you know what you're doing, and if you, I think, perhaps are evolved enough, then maybe you can contain your own ego and yourself in the face of the amazing opening up of the whole universe and all these other dimensions.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, what the psychiatrists and doctors that I've worked with, any medium that says that they're speaking to some higher being and they're getting spirit messages and that it's a problem for them, the psychiatrist is likely to put them on some kind of antipsychotic medication, and they're likely to get a diagnosis of schizophrenia at any medium that goes to a doctor and says they've got this issue, because that's their training and their education, and that's how they deal with it. So
it's unfortunate tricky. Because, you know, there are cultures on our planet where, but probably more in a kind of an indigenous type of culture, where they take a shamanic view to what we would call mental illness, and when they see signs of it unfolding in a young person's life, and typically, I mean, Alana, you can probably, you would probably know more about this than I do, but I think it's fairly common for, not adolescents, but people in their young 20s, early 20s, to have episodes, and in these cultures, with the shamanic view would be that that the spirits are speaking to this person, and this person has a gift for receiving, but they haven't learned how to deal with it yet, so it's out of control at that point in time in their life. And the shamans would spend time with this young person, or older person, if it turns out to be an older person having the experiences, and train them to, you know, in an environment of love, train them to not fear what's happening to themselves, but look upon it as a gift and learn to not control it, but live with it and bring it forth in its fullness and share it, because they would look at it, these cultures would look at it as gifts to not just that person, but to the whole culture. It was kind of, it's a window to, as you say, Lana, to other dimensions, and there's information and guidance to be gleaned there. And they wouldn't, you know, when they look upon our culture that we see it as an illness and we medicate it and try to, you know, dominate it, they're baffled by that. And I've read some interesting articles about that, and I thought, wow, you know, it would be fantastic if there was some way to combine, you know, the two views, so that at least there's an openness to explore these conditions before, you know, before putting the client on lockdown with medication.
I guess as a doctor, I would have to say that, you know, I mean, I use both therapy and medications, but they're, you know, I have seen so many people saved with antidepressants, get back to normal. Antipsychotic agents can they can have side effects, but so many people can be rid of the paranoia, the awful hallucinations, and I think there is a place for them. You know, I think if you can't stand it, and if you're being bombarded by negative spirits, what antipsychotics do is actually just close down the yeah. openings that have opened. And, you know, sometimes yes. that's a very important thing.
Yeah, because you need to be able to have a normal quality life and remain functional and happy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm not dissing the medicine, because I know people, even, you know, in my family, it's worked to, you know, battling depression, antidepressants. But it's more just having a balanced view where you know the practitioner would be able to be open to both. But absolutely, I mean, there are wonder drugs out there that really help people.
Yes.
We have some interesting guests coming up next couple weeks. We have Joseph McGonigal, who's a famous remote viewer, and he's associated with Nancy McGonigal, executive director of the Moreau Institute, and study of consciousness and out-of-body experiences. We also have Dr. Rick Strassman coming up, who's the author of The Spirit Molecule. So, we've got people who do what you do, and they've taken the scientific approach to all of this and sort of exploring these various dimensions and things that these experiences that people like you and I are having. So these are interesting times.
And it's absolutely fascinating because, you know, when you realize that there is more to this world here, it opens up a whole new, approach to life and meaning. What we're going to do is we're going to take a break. And I ask that you, Pat, just to tell us what your website is, and then we'll take a break and we'll come back to talk about this.
Yeah, we're going to go to Margo. Yes. Mateus is going to give us her career card reading.
So just before we do, Matthew Hart, your website?
It's thelifeintended.com. So just as it sounds, thelifeintended.com.
I love it. Wonderful. Great name. All right, we'll take a break now.
All right.
We're going to go to Margo.
Hi, everyone. Hello, Universal Soul Love listeners. This is Margo Mattis, creator of the Career Cards, with the Career Card forecast for this week. Today, it's interesting, the podcast tonight with Matthew Hart, everybody was talking about entities and clearing up the pain of the past, etc. And it's so important that we do that right now. Right now, the world is asking us to move forward. We've been kind of stuck in this retrograde pattern for a really long time. And now, with the solar events and the moon, things that are happening cosmically, it's a great time to sever our ties to the past that are destructive and move ahead with new clarity, a new focus, and a new optimism. I know myself have been caught trying to move ahead in many ways and have not been able to gain the traction that I wanted to in the past 6 months or so. And I know a lot of you feel the same way. But this is the time really to move forward and to let all that stuff go and to know that a beautiful future is waiting for you. So the career cards this week are saying exactly that. They're saying keeping of the past, the keeper of the past card comes forward to say it's time to deal with the issues from the past. So deal with your childhood trauma, deal with the pain caused by your ex-relationships, deal with work issues that are bothering you. This is the time to move out of denial, which is the next card in the career card poll for this week. Come out of the denial around that stuff and clear it up. Just go ahead and clear it up. Some ways to do that include therapy, talking to your friends, fire ceremonies, shamanic journeys, angelic soul clearings, such as the work that I do, the things that Matthew Hart is channeling. All those things can come together to help you move through your denial of some of your past pain and how the past is affecting you and move ahead with clarity and purpose. And the final card in today's career card poll is the commitment card. And as you know, with the career cards, you get three different decks. You get the career cards that give you real solid concrete answers about your career, your life purpose, your relationships, where to go, what to do. And those things are answered by the action and the block card. So the action card for today is commitment. And the denial card, of course, is a block card. So it's cautioning us this week to really be careful of denial. Don't go into denial, come out of denial, and commit to being clear for yourself and clear for your own purpose and your own destiny. And as Matthew said in this podcast, there are many entities out there that are trying to infiltrate us, that are trying to influence us, that are not positive. So if you're a human being on this planet, odds are pretty darn good that you are being tampered with or you have some influences from your past or just from the world at large that you don't want with you anymore, that you want to be free of. So this is the time to really dig in, let go, release, and become whole. If I can help you in any way, you can reach me at margo@thecareercards.com or margo, M-A-R-G-O, at getrealanswers.com. Myself and the Career Cards are here to help you. You can find them at Barnes & Noble or at amazon.com. Until next week, take care and have a wonderful week.
Hello, this is Dr. Lana Love and Detective David Love, Universal Soul Love. Welcome back. So today we're talking to Matthew Hart, who's a producer as well as a spiritual man who channels higher powers. Hello, Matthew.
Hi there. Nice to be back.
And we also have Susan Glynn, our good friend and energy healer here. Hello, Susan.
Hello, guys. Great to be here.
And, of course, Susan is in Australia just like us, but, of course, Matthew's across the ocean in America, Hollywood. So we've been talking about people having awakening and spiritual experiences and the fact that sometimes mental illness is mistaken. Sometimes people are mistaken for being mentally ill when they have these experiences, and of course, having ghosts or other spirits bombard you can, I'm sure, give you a nervous breakdown. So, Sue, I think you also have had this experience with people that you have helped who, in fact, are not mentally ill but have had spiritual spirits try to enter them or control them.
Yes, and I feel that rather than us giving mental health a difficult name and being hard on that, it might be better for us to step back even further and listen to what Matthew is saying and recognise that for me, with the client that I particularly was mentioning, because several people have had this happen to them, but this person was thrown right off their life by the intervention, but they actually have got amazing skills. And I just think that humans are misreading, because, Lani, you did say, we don't know the meaning of life yet and
yes,
the meaning of what reality is. So I gain a great deal of understanding from learning about, listening to people who have had, I call them explorers into the afterlife, who return and then tell us about it. And they give us immense amounts of data that feels very much more real than just the personalized experience. And the other thing that's odd about me, within my energy medicine work, I realized that what my energy medicine work was doing was just clearing the fears of my life, my genetic lineage, of my memory database, this lifetime. It seemed also other lifetimes, and it also seems other existences, which identifies four lineages of memory data, which is an enormous amount of stuff, and most of that, the very, very hugest amount of that, isn't consciously recallable to the conscious mind, where we can remember a memory and then think that we are letting it go, or using, as I do, energy tools to deconstruct the disturbances that those fears are creating. But as I've cleared those fears, I have had one after another guides drop into me. And what I was going to say to you, Matthew, what worked for me was to say, no dark entities around me whatsoever. Don't even walk past. And give me pure truth. Please give me the highest, purest guidance and plenty of detail. And Matthew, it's turning up. What do you think of that?
What a good idea. A very, very good idea, because I guess, Matthew, you wanted to explore this, but I guess you've got to be careful for what you ask. But you can ask as long as you ask of only the entities of the highest power. And, of course, you are now channeling Archangel Michael, aren't you?
And this is also through experience.
Not so much anymore. That was a period of time I was, but now I seem to be predominantly channeling group, what is known as group soul energy, and in this case, it's a group soul that identifies itself as the Guardians. That seems to be the predominant source that I'm channeling to this day. But I just want to go back to what Susan said. I totally agree and resonate with your experience, and it's funny, on my website, the moniker underneath the name of the site is Face Your Fears, Open Your Heart, Transform Your Life. And I definitely relate to going back and clearing the cellular memory, whether it's from this lifetime or past lifetime. This has been something that kind of has been ongoing throughout my life, and it's been, I kind of look at myself and all people as an onion with layer after layer after layer, many of which aren't really accessible, but it's the quest for the truth that has driven me all these years to maybe take navel gazing to new heights. but in my case, I've been led to navel gaze. I haven't just been sitting, focusing on self. It's really been a journey where I've learned to allow, to let life guide me to look at, these layers and slowly but surely peel them off. And in the process of that, I was healed of the interference that that the dark side was having on me. Had I known what you've just taught, Susan, that probably would have sped up my journey quite a bit, but I didn't have any source to go through for that kind of information back in the 80s, so I really just had to endure, and eventually I was guided to find my way out of that, and I'm no longer bothered by any negative beings whatsoever, and if I were to actually feel something, I know what it feels like now, and I would immediately stop what I'm doing and meditate and clear it.
So I guess myself as a healer and therapist, that's really, it sounds like really good news for any of our listeners out there who have had these experiences. Because the good news is that if you have negative experiences with entities, you are becoming more open to the world. However, you have to learn to not allow them in and only ask for the light. And of course, it looks like you have been connected to the light for a long time now, Matthew. We would love to find out more about the Guardian Council, I believe, that you channel.
I want to add to that, too, because, of course, I've had very similar experiences to yours in terms of my journey with this. And I actually work with Lana and Susan regularly on the issues that you mentioned, dealing with negativity and whatnot. And they don't bother me anymore like they used to, because I've through experience like you, I've learned to just deal with all of this. But this body that you mentioned, I don't know, maybe we're accessing a very similar source, specific source, not just the universe. Because I access the collective soul as well, that I consider to be the Guardians. So that I think that's what we're getting to, and we probably get about 10 minutes left on the show.
Okay.
So
maybe it's the same soul.
It could very well be.
I throughout my channeling life, I started with a spirit guide, and then I had questions about angels, which I brought to my spirit guide back in, I think, 2004. And I didn't know the difference back then between a spirit guide and an angel. I thought they might be the same thing, and my spirit guide kind of straightened me out and said, no, I'm not. I'm your guide. I'm not an angel. And he said, he introduced me, he brought up the name Archangel Michael and said, I encourage you to speak to him. He called him my guardian at the time, my guardian angel. He introduced me, and I thought, okay, fine. I started talking to, I said, hello, Archangel Michael. And that started a whole dialogue, which then continued for a few years. And it was kind of back and forth. If I had a question about something, I would ask Archangel Michael, and I would ask my spirit guide, and I would get kind of two different answers that were similar, but definitely a different voice giving these answers. And then one day in 2006, I channeled this message that had a very, very different energy to it, and it was about healing the old wounds. And it's up on my site. I kind of put it up as the lead piece. When you arrive at the Life Intended, you'll see something called Healing the Old Wounds. And when that message finished, instead of signing off with Archangel Michael or my spirit guide, it signed off with something called the Guardians of Light. I think that's how it went at the time, the Guardians of Light, of the Light. And I was like, huh? What is that? And however, I read the message again, and it really touched me deeply, and it felt like a very unique voice that I hadn't heard before. And it was kind of counsel that I could clearly see was intended for more people than myself. And that kind of started this new chapter where maybe over the next couple years, between 2006 and 2008, I would occasionally have a message signed off by the Guardians or the Guardians of the Light. And when it started to happen regularly, I actually went to the computer and Googled the Guardians, wondering if I could find information about them if someone else was channeling that source. I found one individual who had a website with a few messages posted, and they talked about the Guardians. And the messages sounded like they were delivered in a very similar voice to what I was receiving. So I felt content. I was like, okay, I'm not the only person. But that person's website wasn't active. They had been posting a few things, and then they stopped. And I think I reached out to that person to say hello and say we share a common source that we're channeling. But I never heard from her. And so that leads me back to you, David. Like, I absolutely know. I've seen this happen so often in my life that I receive some kind of information and I Google it and I find out there's a lot of other people out there who are connected to that same information or same source in this case. And so quite possibly you and I are. I mean, just in talking with you earlier, I felt like we had so much in common that it wouldn't surprise me if we're both channeling in different ways this same source.
Yeah, you were talking about something that's become very important to me about the forgotten, the lost souls, and rescuing the dead who believe they're still living and who are traumatized by life. And there are millions of them, just like there are traumatized people in life who are lost souls. So it's interesting. It's what Robert Monroe did in his books in trying to rescue lost souls. And it is it's something that people don't even understand, and I know you do because we spoke about
it. What is a lost soul? Can you tell our listeners? What would you call a lost soul?
Well, for the way I understand it, and this is all, as I was telling David earlier, I don't do research. I'm not a researcher. I'm just, I delve into myself, peeling layer after layer, as long as it might take. And I find information out that way. And once I get information, I Google to find out if anyone else can correlate that information and validate it. So anything I tell you about lost souls is something I've experienced and then validated only through finding others who share a similar opinion. So that said, to me, as I understand it, when we die, we cross over, and we cross over with the help of whether it's loved ones or angelic beings. Unless there's a very strange circumstance or a very sudden, unexpected trauma that causes death, there are beings waiting, loving beings waiting to help us cross over, because it obviously is a very meaningful experience, but also can be traumatic, just finding yourself not in body anymore. And what happens during this transition is that the soul is always given a choice. And incidentally, even with all these experiences with dark beings or negative beings, I've discovered that there's always a choice to be made. There's always nobody can force their will upon you without you saying yes, whether you do it of your own conscious volition or somehow you're tricked and you do it without your conscious volition. So that being said, when we're crossing over, we have a choice to accompany this being to the light, or perhaps we might feel conflicted about leaving. Perhaps we're feeling a pull towards our earthly life. Maybe there's unresolved business there that is pulling us. And so at that moment where we can leave and go enter the light, we can choose to not go, and we can stay earthbound. And in that moment, I mean, when you pass over, you still have your mind. Your consciousness does not shift. You still think like you think here while you're in body. And I believe you can still see, if you choose to stay anchored in the earth realm, you can still see what's happening around you. And a lost soul is a being that has so much interest in staying earthbound that they refuse to cross over. And in so doing, they can linger here in the earth plane, or the astral plane as it's known, for as long as they like. I mean, it's your choice whether you want to move on or stay put. And in staying put, these beings are often confused. They're often what you would call lost because there's nothing for them in the earth plane. There's no purpose to remaining here. There's no business they're going to finish. Perhaps they want to see a loved one last time or something, and that could be, you know, purposeful business. But otherwise, if you're lingering for years and years upon end, you're doing so thinking that you're actually living your life and moving and progressing and evolving, but you're actually stagnating. You're actually not progressing. And in a lot of cases, you're causing harm because if you're interacting with human beings who have that opening, have that sensitivity or vulnerability, you can influence them in ways that are not good for their life. And you can bring upon...
So are you talking about ghosts?
And I'm talking about what you would call a ghost. Yes. Yes. What you would call a ghost is basically a lost soul. It's one and the same thing as from my experience and understanding, and I've had plenty of interactions with beings unlike that first one with a ghost where there was no communication whatsoever. There was only the foul residue of that being, which was disgusting and unmistakable in terms of its odor. But in future times, with, you know, later years, I actually have interacted with beings that can converse and have, you know, opinions and have thoughts and speak intelligently, but they're confused. They're lost. They're confused, and they think they know what's going on, but the fact that there's these ghosts, as you might call them, are still hanging about, it indicates that they are, to those who know better, it indicates that they have resisted making the transition to the light, and that is generally, would generally be classified as a confusion that keeps them here.
It's interesting. Instead of being frightened of ghosts, perhaps we need to feel sorry for them and empathic. Look, we have to wrap up very soon, but just very briefly, how can you and the guardians help these lost souls? How do you help these lost souls? Do you help them cross over and with the guardians?
I was telling David, before the guardians entered the scene for me, I felt very, very drawn to these lost souls, and I was still working with Archangel Michael at the time and what sometimes signed off as just the angels as opposed to A. Michael. And I felt so much compassion for these beings, having had a couple of experiences that I didn't, in sight of my own volition, that I asked the angels to actually facilitate bringing these souls to me during my sleep so that I might work with them. And I had, at that time, I had pretty much perfect recall of my dream life. So I would wake up when I woke up, and I would write down everything that happened. And I had several interactions with lost souls and helped, I think about, at the end of the day, I think I've helped maybe about six different beings cross over. But by the time I got to being number seven, it was such a difficult experience, and I was feeling very cocky at the time, like, hey, this is easy. I can do this. I can help these people, these beings. And I got kind of stuck, and I had a lost soul kind of move into my auric field, and I couldn't get this being out, and it was disturbing me because the thoughts that it was carrying and its confusion was so overwhelming that it actually frightened me, and I got a little spooked by it. Once that being actually left of its own volition, not mine, I wasn't able to pray it away or send it to the light. It finally decided.
Let's finish off here. Sorry, we have to finish. But look, thank you so much. Absolutely fascinating,
yeah, thank
Matthew Hart and Susan Lynn. We must do this again sometime. And goodbye from Universal Solar.
We'll see you next time. Thank you. Thank you very much, guys. Matthew.
Thank you.
Bye,
Margot.
Bye, darling.